Rebel Force Radio presents.
Hey, Siri.
Yes, Jimmy Mac.
Call Swank, please.
Calling Jason Swank.
This is RFR Rush Hour.
Jason, are you there?
Yo!
Yo, what's going on, man?
Oh, everything.
Yeah, apparently. I just got the statement from Lucasfilm.
All Mustafar is breaking loose.
Well, here it is, a statement regarding Star Wars Episode 9. Lucasfilm and Colin Trevorrow have mutually chosen to part ways on Star Wars Episode 9. Colin has been a wonderful collaborator throughout the development process, but we have all come to the conclusion that our visions for the project differ. Sound familiar?
Oh, yeah, where have we heard that before? You know, what's funny is that on the Hollywood Reporter story that broke this news, there was a link to a previous story. Sorry, there's a salsa band playing outside here.
Oh, great.
All right.
Let's get them in for a little musical break.
Arriba.
Here on Rush Hour.
Can you hear some of this?
Yeah.
Well,
I hear you.
Okay. You hear it?
Oh, yeah. Sounds good.
Yeah, I'm at the stoplight. Guys, we have breaking Star Wars news. Can you hold it down a little?
Oh, Dios mio.
Oh, Dios mio. Okay, rolling up the windows. Okay, all right. Enough of that. And we got the fuzz. There they go. Wow, they're in hot pursuit.
Usually that's how it works with mariachi bands. You usually have the law in hot pursuit of them.
All right. So anyway, so I'm reading the Hollywood Reporter version of the story, which was basically just, you know, they ran the press release and put it in some context. There was also a headline. It's like, for more, read this story. And this was after the firing of Miller and Lord, where it said, the recent firing of Miller and Lord is a strange. Hold on. Let me get it. It's worth repeating here.
This is Hollywood Reporter.
The Hollywood Reporter. Star Wars firing reveals a disturbance in the franchise. Now, that was on the last disturbance.
Yes.
Now we've got this disturbance. I actually wanted to look at this in two different ways, because I certainly don't want this to be a roast Colin Trevorrow. Obviously the rumors started. Actually, the rumors started before Book of Henry. Jim, I don't know how much we talked about this on air, but you started hearing rumblings from a Star Wars alum who was saying, Colin Trevorrow is not going to finish Episode 9. It's not happening.
Right.
Yeah. Did we ever get into that on the air? Was that?
Yeah, we did. That was
public statements? Okay.
That came from Nine Numb actor Mike Quinn, who would certainly understand this, you know, spending a lot of time on the set. I know Mike plays Nine Numb on set, but I think he also might be doing some like additional puppeteering work, what have you. So, and of course, he's been with the franchise for a really long time. And I'm actually pulling up his Facebook page now because this is where I saw the quote. But oh boy, it's good. It was a while ago when he a few months ago.
He definitely was pulling no punches, saying that he didn't believe that Colin Trevorrow was going to finish work on Episode 9. He threw out the name Joe Johnson.
Yes,
as a possible replacement. We know that Joe Johnson has been he's been outspoken at wanting to get back into Star Wars. His name was attached after the unceremonious leaving of Josh Trank, firing of Josh Trank. Joe Johnson's name came up in conversation as the one who might be the guy that would helm a Boba Fett movie, given, you know, Joe Johnson's history with that character. A fine director in his own right, directed The Rocketeer, definitely certainly a cult classic in the Disney canon. But there's two things I wanted to look at here. One is the rapid nature in which these hirings took place several years ago. I remember that it seemed as though Trevorrow and Gareth and Ryan were all announced within just a few months of each other. It felt that way. Very, very rapid fashion. They were all hired. They were all brought on board. We know now that there was no story. There was no overarching story developed for the sequel trilogy.
Right.
J.J. and Larry Kasdan wrote that story of Force Awakens in a total vacuum. And then it was being handed over to guys like Colin Trevorrow,
Ryan Johnson,
to flush it out. So I think that there was a rush to get all these hirings and these announcements on the one hand. The other hand, I just want to set the table here and see what you think about these two issues. The other hand is the thing that we can't do is we cannot underestimate. Let me put it this way. We cannot overestimate. We cannot misunderestimate the level to which the passing of Carrie Fisher threw a total wrench in Episode 9. The Hollywood Reporter story indicates that the problems with Colin were around the script development, the writing of the script, many drafts, issues with Kathleen Kennedy. But we're only hearing about this now. Why now, as the film is probably getting prepped within the next, next 12 months to go in front of the cameras?
Mm-hmm. Well, I've heard Kathleen.
I think that they had a script. I think they were happy with this script. The wrench that I think was thrown in was the passing of Carrie Fisher. They don't know what to do. She was probably more vital and essential to the story than we'll ever know. And I think that's when the wheels started to come off. There may have been some real disagreement about how to deal with her passing.
Mm-hmm. And maybe Trevorrow wanted to go into the route of doing something with CGI. And then Lucasfilm made the statement that they weren't going to go in that direction. Maybe that's something that could have burned Trevorrow. Or a recast. Here's some information.
I mean, Lucasfilm never made a statement about recasting.
No.
They did make a statement about CGI. So the door was open. But anyway, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
This is the stuff that I find really interesting, though. And this is what the Hollywood Reporter's sources are telling them. Rumors of Trevorrow's departure have dogged the project since early June, weeks before the opening of The Book of Henry, his thriller that was panned by critics and failed at the box office. Sources say script issues have continued to be an issue during Episode 9's development, as you said, with Trevorrow having repeated stabs at multiple drafts. In August, they brought on Jack Thorne to work on the script. But here's the interesting stuff. Sources say that the working relationship between Trevorrow and Lucasfilm head Kathleen Kennedy became unmanageable.
Unmanageable.
Sound familiar? Kennedy, who had already been through one director firing replacement on the Han Solo spinoff, was not eager for a sequel and tried to avoid this decision. This is actually, she's been through it once with the Han Solo spinoff, but she's been through it twice if you count the Josh Trank debacle. And they do bring that up in the article. And so I think that they had to act now because Episode 9 is going to be going in front of the cameras next year, probably in the springtime. And they don't want a situation where... I mean, right now, this is a very delicate time for that film because casting decisions have to be made. And you don't want to start hiring a cast when you don't have confidence in your director. And so he's out. But, this just really sets a tone for what's happening at Lucasfilm. And what I have determined that there's a shift in the culture concerning the making of Star Wars films. In the beginning, I believed Kathleen Kennedy thought Star Wars could be the perfect creative incubator for all sort of ideas, different genres, etc. But once The Force Awakens hit and was such a big smash, and seeing how it was firmly committed to traditional Star Wars, the decision was made at that point to, you know, stay within the mold. Don't go too far outside the box.
So, model, as Paul would say.
Yes. And so with these young directors who, you know, they want to breathe fresh air into the franchise and take it in all sort of different directions, Kathleen Kennedy and her brain trust has had second thoughts. And now they want to stick with a more traditional way of making Star Wars films. And perhaps the experience working with Ron Howard just felt right on the Han Solo film. And that's something that they would like to continue seeing happen in the making of these films. So there's a lot of talk about who could replace Trevorrow. I am speculating it will be an older director, a veteran, someone who's been around the block once or twice. I would love to see Steven Spielberg step into the role, but he has Indiana Jones next.
No, 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 no. You just stepped on what I was going to say. That's okay. There were statements made earlier this week by David Koepp, who's writing Indy 5.
Right. I saw those.
And there were two things that he said. One, he confirmed that Shia LaBeouf's character, Mutt Williams, will not be in the film.
Saw that.
The second thing they confirmed is they've moved the date of the release back from 2019 to 2020.
Yeah, that had already been announced.
I believe that the stars are aligning for Spielberg to come in and do episode 9 and go right into Indy after that.
Wow, it's like 1982 all over again.
Yeah, David Koepp did confirm that Spielberg just wrapped up shooting The Post. That's his the current film. That's the film that he'll have after Ready Player One, which is Ernie Cline's movie, based on the Ernie Cline book. So it's going to go Ready Player One, which comes out this fall, then The Post, and then so he just finished one project. Needs to roll into another. I think it's going to be episode 9. I think that the stakes are so high. Jim, we've never seen, since Force Awakens, stakes this high on a Star Wars movie. It's going to wrap up this sequel trilogy. They've got to deliver. And there might be more wiggle room for a guy like Rian Johnson to kind of maneuver his way here. I have no doubt Ryan's going to deliver a great film, but there's going to be more forgiveness in this middle chapter than there will be for the finale. They've got to have very capable hands. To your point, Kathleen Kennedy probably just fell into an amazing working relationship with Ron Howard. I've been involved on a much smaller scale in projects where someone has to be replaced. When you have to replace somebody, you don't want any guesswork. You want to go. You want to get a veteran, somebody that can just pick up the ball and run with it. I think that guy is Steven Spielberg, or it could be J.J. Abrams coming back. But I think you're right. It's definitely going to be a veteran. But the comments by David Koepp about Indy being moved, yeah, that was announced some time ago. But when was that Indy announcement made, when they moved the from 19 to 20.
I don't know off the top of my head. At some point during the summer.
Yeah, yeah. So that could have been a preventative move. But first, they needed to clear Spielberg's schedule. And who could... I mean, it's within the same company. It's within the same company, within Lucasfilm. They're clearing Spielberg's schedule. That was the first maneuver. Second maneuver is get rid of Trevorrow, create the stir, come out a week later, 2 weeks later, and announced that Spielberg is indeed going to be the director of episode 9.
Hollywood,
that's what I think is going to happen.
Well, Hollywood Reporter is saying that they've been hearing rumors of Trevorrow's departure since early June. So this gives us a few months here. I mean, basically the whole summer for the forces of nature behind the scenes to sort of reset everything and do exactly what you just said. So it's possible. Could we see Steven Spielberg finally direct a Star Wars film? I think Steven Spielberg is tailor-made to direct a Star Wars film, and I'm shocked he hasn't already. But remember, when the announcement was made that Disney was going to be creating new Star Wars films, Steven was immediately approached by the media, and he said, I'm not going to do them. That is that genre belongs to my friend George. But I think Steven might have been just talking out of his butt a little bit, and now that time has moved on, he sees one of his peers, a contemporary in Ron Howard, step into the director's chair and thinks, well, what the heck? Maybe I should give it a stab. Or another direction things can go in is they can just shift Ron Howard from the Han Solo film onto Episode 9. Or they could have Ryan Johnson stick around and direct back-to-back films.
All good theories. That's true. I think the best play here is to go with the veteran. I mean, it's hard to call Ryan, not a veteran. He just wrapped or is putting the finishing touches on 8. I just am finding it interesting that the issue seems to be less about Trevorrow's ability to deliver the mechanics of directing the film and more about his ability to deliver a viable script. That makes me wonder, how far behind are they? How far behind are they? If they don't have a workable script, they don't have a story that they like, a satisfying conclusion to this. And I'll still say that I think that it has much to do with the passing of Carrie Fisher. We had heard early rumors. Episode 7 was Han's movie. Episode 8 is Luke's movie. And Episode 9 was to be Leia's film. So they would each get their big moment. Interesting that there was never a real plan to have them all have, you know, sharing their moment.
Right. Because, that's what Lucas was doing with the original trilogy. Was he, especially in a film like Empire, he was cutting back and forth and telling two stories at the same time. But you don't see that so much, I guess, in The Force Awakens.
Right.
Not really at all. Leia amounts to primarily a cameo, and Harrison's in the film plenty, and of course we know we don't see Mark until the end. Something else that's being talked about is who is going to replace Colin Trevorrow is, some people are saying this is a good opportunity for Lucasfilm to slot in a female director. However,
sure,
when I look at Kathleen Kennedy's past statements regarding having a female director come into the Star Wars franchise, she's had reservations about it because she says it's a priority of hers to bring in a female director, but she wants to make sure that they're set up for success. And like we've talked about, there's a lot of pressure on this, on whoever's going to be creating this film or directing this film. There's a lot of pressure because this is going to wrap up the trilogy. It's going to set the stage for future films if there should be more episodic chapters in Star Wars. The pressure is going to be enormous. Kennedy said back in December, we want to make sure that when we bring in a female director to do Star Wars, they're set up for success. They're gigantic films and you can't come into them with essentially no experience. And she's saying that because she knows after the Josh Trank debacle, and now in the wake of all of that, Lord and Miller out, Colin Trevorrow out. So,
and massive reshoots on Rogue One.
And massive reshoots. And bringing in another director to handle those reshoots in Tony
right.
Gilroy. And that gets downplayed an awful lot, but that's what happened. So essentially with five Star Wars films in production since Disney has taken over, the director has essentially been replaced on four of the five films. J.J. Abrams is J.J. Abrams is the only one who is, and Rian Johnson. Those two guys have come out unscathed.
Yeah, if I got to say, and this is not, I'm not trying to roast Kathleen Kennedy here, but if I'm Bob Iger, if this was any other company, as with any other product. And I'm the CEO, and I'm looking at Kathleen Kennedy, who's running the Lucasfilm division. I'm sorry, I see this as catastrophically poor judgment. Now, has she been able to turn these things around? Rogue One turned around beautifully. We'll see about Han Solo. We'll see about Episode 9. But I think that there was a pretty significant display of poor judgment in Kathleen Kennedy's hiring. Jim, you may be onto something. I mean, it's really hard for me to imagine somebody like Kathleen Kennedy and the experience that she has making these kind of mistakes. So your theory about the whole paradigm that they entered these films with, hey, we're going to do a, this is our war movie, then we're going to do a comedy, and then we're going to do this, and then we're going to do that. That paradigm has shifted to, hey, we're going to make great Star Wars movies.
Yes. Yes.
And so that shift happened after all these hirings. So it's one or the other. It's either Kathleen Kennedy has had very poor judgment, or that there was a truly huge shift in terms of the goals of this company and the types of films they were going to be making.
I just got news from Paul Babin. He says, don't know if it's just a super freaky coincidence, but all of Joe Johnston's internet accounts have gone dead this week. Twitter, YouTube, etc. Been following him for years. Today, nothing. So he
Joe Johnston. Well, Jim, if you would, I know The Rocketeer. Let's look at Joe Johnston's credits. Obviously, his pedigree as far as a key collaborator of George Lucas, goes back to the original Star Wars.
He was one of the guys who contributed to creating the look of the Millennium Falcon. And then as time went on, he did the same for the Imperial Walkers, the AT-ATs, Boba Fett.
He had
a heavy hand in creating Boba Fett. And he's directed some great films since he's left. So I'll just run through some of them here, starting with Honey, I Shrunk the Kids, which really put him on the map as a director back in 1989, followed by The Rocketeer, Jumanji. He directed Jumanji, October Sky, a couple of episodes of the Young Indiana Jones Chronicles television show. He directed Jurassic Park 3. Which gets a bad rap, but I actually enjoy Jurassic Park 3 quite a bit.
Hey, someone had to direct it. In
2004, he directed a film called Hidalgo, which I assume is about the life and times of Lucasfilm's Pablo Hidalgo. Yeah, that's what might help get him the gig. We have The Wolfman in 2010. We have Captain America, The First Avenger in 2011. And he's lined up to direct the next Narnia film, Chronicles of Narnia. I didn't even know they were still making those. And that's
interesting.
Yeah.
Well, Disney gave up on the films after the second one, and then I believe there was a different company involved in the third, which is a shame. I've actually loved all of those. Yeah, here I am saying, oh, he directed The Rocketeer. Well, I forgot about a lot of those others, and I even forgot about Captain America as well. So
in my opinion, the best of the Captain America films was The First Avenger, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, this is definitely someone I think who could, is really the total package, wouldn't you say, when it comes to stepping in and directing a Star Wars film?
He's done it all in the industry, he really has.
Yeah.
So, I mean,
and the fact that his social media account. So Paul's saying, I apologize that I lost the connection a little bit. So Paul was saying that this is a guy who's pretty active on social media, yet as of today, he's dried up nothing on any of his social media accounts.
They're all shut down. They've been
shut down.
Yeah, the plug has been pulled. Nothing is there.
Wow.
Here, I'm going to punch up Twitter right now because I believe I've been following Joe Johnston for years myself. And just, like, let's make sure Paul is not seeing things here.
If this ends up being true, we're going to have to change Nine Numb's name to Deep Throat.
I actually have his post where he telegraphed this change. This was something Nine Numb actor Mike Quinn, he posted on his Facebook page on June 22nd, the day when news broke about Lord and Miller being removed from the Han Solo film. So he says a few things about working for directors and producers and all this stuff. And then he gives an update at the very end of the post. He says, the movie is on hiatus for another couple of weeks while they regroup and get little Ronnie up to speed. He's obviously talking about the Han Solo film.
Yeah.
As always, there will be reshoots and the movie will turn out to be awesome. So nobody panic and everybody keep calm. My prediction for the episode 9 director, Joe Johnston. And then he has a little smiley face emoji with sunglasses on. So, but I mean, that just comes out of nowhere at the end.
Yeah.
And we were surprised when we saw this because it's like, why is Nine Numb actor Mike Quinn making a prediction on who the episode 9 director is going to be when we already have an episode 9 director announced a couple of years ago in Colin Trevorrow? So he's predicting Joe Johnston. As of today, Joe Johnston's social media accounts have dried up. I do not see him on Twitter.
Wow.
And all hell is breaking loose. So let's see here. Some people are making suggestions here on our Twitter feed as to who they would like to see replace Colin Trevorrow on episode 9. Chad says Ryan Johnson, Patty Jenkins, or dare I say, George Lucas.
George is always my pick. Always will be.
Now that would be a bombshell. That would be a bombshell.
Save your butts.
James says, I wish they would just bring Rian Johnson along. It's been a privilege as a Star Wars fan to have him lead The Last Jedi. Best feeling ever is Star Wars is in the hands of a fan.
The jury is still out on Rian Johnson.
Right, I know.
I mean, let's not, just because the production has been free of controversy does not mean that he's going to deliver the movie that we hope he's going to deliver. I think he will.
Just because he served you up a slice of cold pizza while you were waiting in line for Star Wars Celebration doesn't mean The Last Jedi is going to be perfect.
But I told him no mushrooms!
Here's Bryce. He's making a suggestion that definitely is coming from the heart. He says, Kyle Newman is ready to step in immediately. Robert Swift also says Kyle Newman. Lots of people saying Kyle. Let's see if Kyle has posted anything. Like, I'm available, you know, because last time he did that, it was pretty funny.
I would love to see Kyle. We'd want to see. What about Dave Filoni?
Wowie, wow. That's a great pick.
It's
such a big movie. As Kathleen Kennedy said, you can't just slide in without any experience at all. And that would be a tough one. That would be throwing Dave to the wolves for sure. And he would probably enjoy it because he's such a supporter of wolf conservation.
Well, I got to tell you, there's really nobody that I can think of that I'd rather be writing episode 9 than Dave Filoni, to be quite honest with you.
As a writer, huh? Well, he has no experience writing films. So, again.
Well, he certainly knows how to write Star Wars.
Yes. Yes, he does. I'm looking
blocks. He learned at the knee of George Lucas.
A lot of people on Twitter are saying, bring George back.
I think that's just going to be the funniest thing.
Oh.
Look, the flip side of this is, this is fun. There's controversy. There's excitement. It's sexy. It's exciting. But the flip side of this is they don't want to make a mistake. We should all be very, very happy that they're not afraid to course correct. So I have to, I wear different hats. I put my Bob Iger hat on. I say, you've made a lot of poor decisions. You're having to recalibrate a little too much here, KK. But then as a fan, I'm pleased that they don't want to make the wrong decision here. But I don't think, again, this is about the mechanics of being an able director. Certainly, Colin Trevorrow has, you know, I mean, look, Jurassic World was a huge success. Very technical film to make. I don't believe he wrote it. Did he write it?
Oh, gosh. I don't know about that. I don't think he did. I'd have to look that one up. Jurassic. Jurassic World. There it is.
Yeah.
Let's see here. Who wrote that? No, he... Oh, there's five credits on the screenplay.
So yeah, I'm sure.
Sounds like a Star Wars film. He did he did contribute screenplay. Uh-huh. Yeah, he did. He did. So
where's his name in the list?
At the bottom. At the second bottom.
Second bottom. All right.
Well, you have two teams working on the script for Jurassic World. Colin Trevorrow and Derek Conley was team number one, and team number two is Rick Jaffa and Amanda Silver. So I think, you know, much like in the case with Rogue One, you saw the story being developed by oh, God, it's so confusing because it also says story, Rick Jaffa and Amanda Silver. So Colin Trevorrow and Derek Conley, who I assume is his writing partner, they just made some contributions to the script primarily.
Yeah. Which is not uncommon. Sometimes those contributions actually happen on set while filming.
Yeah.
And you make a big enough change, you get a writer's credit.
Right. Well, you know what?
So that
I'm gonna rush you along a little bit here because have a big appearance tonight on the East Side Dave Show on the Anthony Cumia Network,
right.
I'm sure we'll be talking about this. Still recovering from Force Friday. Somebody put up a funny meme, and it said, "When you look at your bank account after Force Friday," and it's a clip of Anakin Skywalker going, "What have I done?" But been playing around with these talking action figures, and we discovered after last week's show we can get more than one quote out of these Force Link action figures. So
yeah, this follows under the category of literally hit and miss with this technology. It's a little janky.
Yeah.
I can't get a lot of consistency out. It's kind of fun. It's sort of retro. You know, we had a lot of fun with our Lando and our Saw Gerrera talking dolls, which are still very, very rare.
Very rare.
I can't even find them on eBay.
No. Nobody wants to sell them. Once they get them, they cherish them, and they don't want to sell them, and it's going to be something to be passed down from generation to generation in families. So,
for sure.
At least in mine.
Now, you would think with this, you know, being 2017 technology, that it would be a little bit more consistent, but the trick is that once your Force Link reads the character, you give it a little tap, and you can cycle through the different lines. You know, Jim, one of the things I thought about once I realized that this was the case, I thought, well, what a lost opportunity. It would be great if you would be able to connect your Force Link online to download new lines of dialogue.
Wow, how cool would that
as
be?
the film comes out, etc. So that would be interesting. But yeah, maybe for episode 9 figures they'll do that. But still, there are some lines that are clearly taken from the pages of episode 9. But there's also a lot that are just rehashes of lines that we've heard delivered by characters in episode 7, The Force Awakens.
Right. Well, I have Snoke here with me if you want to hear what he has to say.
Yeah, please.
All right, here we go. Snokey, baby.
There's been an awakening.
All right. Something we know from The Force.
There's been an awakening.
The Force Awakens. All right.
All right, now you got to tap it.
All right, hold on. We were talking and he started talking. But you have to sort of move the hinge on the Force Link to get him to say different things. Let's see what he says here if I go like this.
There's been an awakening.
Damn it.
Yeah, I found good luck with two finger tap right on the speaker.
Let me try
two
again.
There's been an awakening.
Come on, work with me, Snow.
For you, all is lost.
There, that was new.
Oh.
For you, all is lost. What else does he say?
Mm-hmm.
Say something, Snoke.
Your emotions have made you weak.
Really? Oh.
I think he probably directs that line to Kylo Ren.
Yep.
Or maybe Luke.
Yep.
There's been an awakening.
We know, Snoke.
This is definitely not Andy Serkis, by the way.
Oh, I think he could be.
No, I don't think so.
There's been an awakening.
Hold on.
For you, all is lost. There's been an awakening.
Come on, we know. I'm such a spaz with these things. Well, there we got a couple lines out of Snoke, so that was cool. All right, so before I hook up with Eastside Dave, there is one thing I have to ask you about. I just want some thoughts from Jason Swank on this amazing day, this amazing day in television animation history. Today is the 25th anniversary of the Batman animated series, which I know is very important to you.
It is so important. It's probably remains certainly my favorite animated show ever. Maybe my all-time favorite TV show, period. The 1989 film with Michael Keaton and Jack Nicholson made me fall in love with the character, but it was the animated series that really gave me my understanding of the character, the canon. And I know there's a lot of canon when it comes to a character like Batman, 75 years. But I don't think that its influence on Batman as a property, as a franchise, and on the future of animation. I mean, that was a heyday, what was going on at Fox Animation, not just with Batman the Animated Series, but what was going on with Steven Spielberg when he was executive producing things like Pinky and the Brain and Animaniacs and Freakazoid and Tiny Toons and all of this stuff. It was just such a high mark for animation. But yes, I'm so excited. I've been collecting DC Collectibles line of Batman Animated Series figures. I haven't missed one yet. I just got word that the five-pack of Mr. Freeze, Poison Ivy, Bane, Killer Croc, and Officer Reyes is going to be shipping here shortly. So I'm very excited. Great for the 25th anniversary. And by the way, it makes me feel really old.
Oh, 25 years that doesn't feel too bad to me. You know, because we've been spending the whole year celebrating 40 years of Star Wars. So I can, 25 years just seems like a breath of fresh air to me. I remember watching this show at a time when I wasn't really, I don't know, you know, to be a part of geek culture. I've never really extrapolated myself from geek culture. I've always read comic books. I had a little bit of downtime during my college years. But when I started my career in the late 80s, early 90s, I had definitely rediscovered comic books. And The Death of Superman really helped bring me back into comic books big time. It had me reading comic books more regularly. And then Star Wars returned. And so it was just an amazing time. But geek culture wasn't a thing back then. You know, I'm talking, you know, what are we saying, 25 years ago? So I was working as a young guy coming up in radio and, you know, working with a lot of personalities and rock and roll people and musicians and everything. And so the concept of a grown man sitting back and reading a Superman or a Batman comic or, you know, collecting Star Wars action figures, it was pretty exotic at the time to be that way. You know, some people might look back and say, oh, it was, you know, kind of twisted or whatever, but I'd like to say it was sort of exotic. And it was something I kind of hid a little bit in those early years.
Oh,
for
really?
Sure. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I didn't want to be so judged. And because that was what was happening. You know, you hear a lot of people talking about, oh, well, I got bullied for this or that, you know, but I for me, I got bullied like crazy. I got bullied on 50,000 watt radio stations on the air for my love of Star Wars and things like that. I mean, I really did. You know, I should play some tapes. maybe on a Rush Hour or something. But it's
well, for those out there, we've got a lot of young folks listening to us that maybe you've not delved into Batman the Animated Series. It's available if you have Amazon Prime, you can stream the whole series. I would check out Heart of Ice for sure, written by the great Paul Dini. Paul Dini had two great contributions to Batman canon. One, he made Mr. Freeze a villain of real consequence.
All right. Well, that's great, but you just totally interrupted me. I was right in the middle of seeing something, and it started going off on Paul Dini. What I was what I was trying to get to, okay, was not anything that I was really open about doing something like watching the Batman animated series, you know, as a guy in my young 20s. Yeah. And I remember one day I was held up at the radio station. I was working at the Loop Radio in Chicago with a guy named Jim Volkman, who is just one of the funniest guys in the world. But he overheard me making a phone call home to my brother, probably still in high school at this time, and telling him that he needs to set the VCR to record the Batman cartoon because I'm going to be late because we're going out for a work function. He overheard me making that phone call. And I think if I saw him today, he would still say, "So you're still watching those Batman cartoons?" But like I said, it was uncommon for an adult to be in that sort of thing back in the late 80s, early 90s. I mean, there certainly were plenty of adults who were that way. But, I mean, you know, and I would have to take my lumps for it, too, you know. And so, I mean, I know for some people it's probably weird to hear, you know, stories about a middle-aged white guy looking back at his youth and getting bullied for enjoying nerdy things. But I certainly was, definitely as a young adult. I really was. So, you know, I'm not...
Quite a struggle.
Oh, quite a struggle.
The struggle is real.
I always just laughed it off, and, you know, I never cared. I always thought, hey, I like what I like, and I don't
care. Who's laughing now?
Who's laughing now, damn it? So Batman, 25 years, and I know you're a huge fan of Paul Dini. So, you were saying...
I just wanted to throw in, it's a big catalog of episodes, well over 100 episodes. But go in and check out Heart of Ice, and that would be one I would definitely get. Also, Harley and Ivy is a great one, and Almost Got 'Em is another great one. So those are three of my favorite Batman animated series episodes. But, you know, before Heart of Ice came out, you know, Mr. Freeze was really a pretty lame villain.
Yeah.
But it was Batman Animated Series that gave him some real depth. Unfortunately, they would not follow up with that. They tried in the Batman and Robin film, like when they cast Schwarzenegger in the role, they kind of tried to bring the whole, you know, dead wife into it and all of that, but they failed miserably on many levels with that movie. But oh, you got me all excited. I apologize for interrupting, but I was so excited to talk a little Batman animated series.
I wanted to get your thoughts on it. So those are three great suggestions. And say the name of those episodes again, 1, 2, 3.
Heart of Ice, Harley and Ivy.
That's a great one.
And Almost Got 'Em. Oh, and Batman in My Basement's also another great one.
Okay, well, I'm actually writing these down. Batman in Basement, okay.
Batman in My Basement, yeah. They're all available. If you're an Amazon Prime member, you can stream them for free.
Oh, yeah.
Also, I think iTunes has the whole series for about $60, which is actually not bad at all.
Not bad at all, but if you got the Amazon, go for that. Perfect. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know what? I'm going to watch some Batman tonight to celebrate 25 years. And maybe I'll call Jim Volkman and tell him I'm watching... I'll take a picture of myself doing it. I'll be like, look, man, nothing changed. Nothing changed. So just looking at some of the things some of our friends are saying real quick before I let you go about Trevorrow. You know, Kyle always said Trevorrow was a real nice guy. Joe Johnson, name keeps coming up.
Yep.
So we'll see what happens.
Now, Jim, the last time this happened, I believe we had about 2 days between the announcement of the firing of Lord Miller and the announcement, the official announcement of the hiring of Ron Howard. I'm wondering if we're going to see something that quick. Maybe not, given the fact that this film is not in front of cameras or still in the script phase. It might be that they need to hire someone to write the film and then someone else to direct it as well.
Well, I mean, they have, they brought in that new writer.
Oh, right.
So we already have a new writer attached, yes, to episode 9. But, you know, like I said, this is a delicate area where they're going to be getting into casting and the film's to go in front of the cameras next year. So if there is a change that needs to be made, now is the time. But really, sure. You know, I mean, it's interesting how StarWars.com puts up in their statement that it was creative differences that were irreparable at that point. You know, I mean, they basically say that. Our conclusion is that our visions for the project differ. So, so, I mean, it's obvious that a certain formula is now in place with creating Star Wars films these days. And if you're not following the formula, you're out.
Yeah.
Cool.
And we've only seen the results of 2.
That's right.
We've got one being filmed. We've got one being written and to be filmed shortly. We've got rumors of the Obi-Wan film. That'll be the next to go into pre-production. If it's not already in pre-production.
Quite honestly, I might like to see Spielberg come back for that one. You know,
for Obi-Wan. Oh, that would be interesting.
Yeah.
That would be interesting.
Could you imagine?
I do like the idea of pairing the right director with the right story. To your point about Spielberg and Obi-Wan, I like that as well. I like that idea.
Well, we'll see what develops here in the next 24 to 48 hours, and we'll follow up more on this discussion on the weekly Rebel Force Radio. And we got a bunch of other cool
things.
You in
the Patreon audience, you're getting all of this first. This is our first blush, our first reactions.
You got it.
Teleprompter free.
Totally. And also we'll have a review of the new Star Wars Rebels season 4 trailer that launched over the weekend at Toronto Comic Con. And we do have some
speaking of the fan expo, I got a shout out to our resident filmmaker Sheldon Norton and his son Chase. They were able to snag a couple of exclusives for me while they were out there, so I really appreciate that. And I think they were covering the panel, the Rebels panel with Dave Filoni for us as well.
Yes, yeah, cool. They tried to get some audio of it, didn't really turn out all that well, but maybe we could pull a couple of nuggets out of there here and there.
Yeah.
What I'm trying to do is get panels, complete panels, so our Patreon audience can hear them exclusively. And so we've been working with guys like Kevin Lyle, who's very active in the convention world, hosting panels and everything. And we're sending out ringers and everything, but, you know, so hopefully we'll be able to come through with some more panel audio. But, you know, of course, there are technical hiccups along the way from time to time. And so it's trial and error right now, you know. I can't be at every one of these shows. So
he's only one man, people.
And I've only been to Star Wars Celebration this year. I haven't been to any other conventions, and I have no plans to go to any other conventions. So, Wizard World came and went. That was last weekend here in Chicago, and I didn't. You know, the kids didn't even ask to go or anything. It's just Force Fridays here, and we've been spoiling ourselves with things like flea markets and garage sales over the summer. So we're scoring left and right, and the need to go fight the crowd at a giant convention center is a little lost. I got to be honest with you. I think Star Wars Celebration put a kind of a sour taste in my mouth about attending these big, huge conventions. You know, it's difficult to say the least. And I'm not really down with difficult these days. So
I'm with you.
Maybe I'm just getting too old for this shit. All right. Jason, it was great talking to you, brother. I got to go. I have a date with Eastside, so let's get out of here.
All right, man. Well, thank you again to all of our Patreon supporters. We appreciate it very much. We're glad to be able to bring you things like this and a lot more. So make sure that you're checking your individual feed per your level of contribution and all that stuff. But we'll have more this week on Rebel Force Radio, the flagship show. But until then, for Rebel Force Radio, I'm Jason.
And I'm Jimmy Mack.
And remember,
the Force will be with you always.